Hey, everybody. Welcome back. It's another episode of Simply Amazing. Tim Ryder from the Apple. Taryn, how we doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. So when people are hearing this, it'll be a couple days removed from that Dodgers series. But I think we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about it just for a couple minutes. I thought that was like a great team effort. A lot of people carrying the load. Lindor on Thursday in that game was excellent. And one thing that really stuck with me is just like baseball, right? That first game, Lux did everything for the Dodgers. I think he drove in all the runs, if I'm not wrong, or maybe like all but one. And then on Thursday, he struck out with runners on. It was second and third in a big spot with the Dodgers up one. And then in the field, routine ground ball is hit his way. And Marte, who I guess he was busting out of the box. He had to have been in order to beat this throw. But he looked like he was going like 80%. Somehow beats that throw, starts a rally. And the Mets end up scoring to tie and take the lead there. That's just, you know, that's baseball, right? Because then the ball drops in behind Lux, and it's just a funny game, and it goes both ways. And one day it's very kind, and then the next day it can be a ton of little things that end up throwing you off. So I was just reminded about how special and unique that this game is.
I think the little things, and especially how little breaks we saw it this past week, how they can affect the game and the series and the momentum moving forward. I mean, you know, this was like a heavyweight battle. Not only the play, the postseason implications, you know, oh my gosh, if we get seven games in October between the Mets and the Dodgers, I mean, I think we'll be the luckiest baseball fans in the world, all of us.
Yeah, my blood pressure can't handle that, but...
Oh, we have ways to chill out and relax and watch the game. Off the air. We'll talk off the air. Anyway, you know, but these, you know, the way the Mets handled not only opportunities being afforded them, but not letting things spiral when things didn't go their way. You know... Jake was hanging some sliders in his start, and things got a little hairy for a second. But, you know, of course, he snapped back into form. And then everyone just kind of picks up and, you know, gets the job done. And I think it's really a testament to the vibe and the whole energy that this team kind of embraces of just relax, get the job done, do your job individually, and collectively good things are going to happen. And I think we've seen it time and time again. We've seen it, you know, in this past series, the Mets just kept their noses to the grindstone. They got hits when they needed them. They got over bad spots. They capitalized on opportunities, and, you know, you pick your heads up and you take a two or three from the best team in baseball, a generationally good baseball team, the model for what pretty much every team who has a commitment to winning is following.
Specifically what Steve Cohen has said that they want to be. So, yeah.
Punch him in the mouth. Punch him in the mouth and say, we'll see you in about a month or so.
That was the first series win over the Dodgers in a season series for the Mets since 2015.
Okay. I was okay. Like, it couldn't have been that long, but I was expecting, I'm like, boy, this could go back to the 80s.
And first series win at home for the Mets over the Dodgers since 2011, I think.
Okay.
Pretty crazy.
Dodgers had some, I guess, non-competitive teams for a few years there before this recent, I guess, prolonged stretch.
But
Andre Ethier was a player, but yeah, I guess he kind of got caught in the wind there.
The Kemp teams, too, they had good teams. Gary was saying, you know, they made it to the dance a lot of times before finally winning that Mickey Mouse 2020 title. But that was as competitive, as close a season series, I think, as I've ever seen. Specifically in these three games, Gary was saying, I think there were three innings where a team was leading by more than one run, and that was before the Mets scored three late. I think that was the bottom of the seventh. So maybe there were five or six innings where a team was leading by more than one run. And you consider the fact that it's like, you know, in 27 innings, only six of them is it like a little bit out of hand. And even still, like, the Dodgers brought the tying run to the plate and rocketed some balls off of Diaz. I had to take a couple of big deep breaths in that eighth inning the other day. This is great competition. And I think that the Mets being chased by the Braves all year, and the Braves are a phenomenal team and organization as well, I think that's made them better. I think that's made them hungry and resilient, and they keep going. And Nimmo's catch, love that.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, that was like an Andy Chavez homage. That was fantastic.
Homage. Yeah, that was like a kid like trying to do a dunk in a yard compared to Andy, but it was, what a catch. I mean, hey, Andy got like his armpit over the wall. Until Nimmo was doing that, getting like the S of the Mets on his jersey over the wall. I don't know. I just, you know, very, very great catch. Outstanding catch. Not an Andy catch. I'm sorry.
Can we talk a little bit about his development as a center fielder?
Absolutely. One of the biggest. Jolly Olive, by the way. Jack Olive from Shea Station. Everybody knows who he is.
Yeah.
He put up a terrific, I guess, just a compilation of his outs above average from 2020 until now. Go check that out. And then, of course, come back and listen to our conversation, because it's a good one. The work he's put in is notable, to say the least.
Yeah. Have you seen like such a significant turnaround in just a 2-year span? Specifically, I think what you're talking about, right? Like, he retweeted Mets Analytics. These are the biggest improvements by a center fielder in outs above average over a 2-year span in the statistics 7-year history. And the defensive metrics have issues. John Boy did a whole thing about why the infield metrics are bad, but the outfield metrics are a little bit more reliable, I think. So yeah. He has the line of the shields here from 2016 to 2018. He went up 12 outs above average. George Springer, 17 to 19, 10. And then Brandon Nimmo, 9 so far.
Yeah,
that's like a huge improvement. This is a guy, I think, who's really worked hard to improve his overall game, but despite not having like a great arm in center field, has made all of the plays and has made it look really smooth, getting back to the wall and saving some of these what could be game-breaking hits.
Oh, he did it again on Thursday. Chased a ball into the gap that I forget exactly the spot, but had a little levity to the situation. I think it was later in the game. But off the bat, it looked like this thing was going into the gap, and he made it look mostly routine. And it's wonderful. And you have to keep in mind with Nimmo, I mentioned this on Twitter on Thursday, I think. Before, in 2020, when he had that negative 4 outs above average in center field, that was and remains his only major league season with a negative outs above average at any outfield position. I think him getting familiar with the position, him getting familiar with the nuances and the intricacies of center field, which, you know, I was never a center fielder. I've never spent more than, you know, garbage time in the outfield as a young player in high school, whatever. But I have to imagine that it's a lot more detailed, a lot more intricate than playing a corner outfield spot. I think that level of I think the progress that he's made, of course, it's outstanding. But I think his potential and his his potential to reach that height was probably always there. I think that maybe folks were harping on, oh, look, he's awful in center field. He's a terrible outfielder. Statistically, at least advanced metrics, he's always been well above average in the outfield. Again, just that one really bad season, his first full year in center field. The year before that, I think he was either zero or plus one in center. Didn't have the amount of consistent reps out there, but, you know, he's a terrific outfielder. His approach to the plate has certainly changed, and I still want to do a little deeper dive on that one day. But, boy, the strides that he's made to make himself a complete player, and I'm you know, there's really no leaving anything out when I say complete player. He might not be a five-tool guy, but he's got five tools. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they don't always show up all the time in every game, but the guy can hit for power. He's had a couple of really big home runs this year. And he has a flair for doing it when the Mets need an insurance run, is when he's really done it this year. But yeah, he's a really, really solid player. And I think he's having a great year. And so many of these Mets are, right?
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. He was bumping for a little while there. And he was.
Yeah. After Mar-a-Lago was raided. Yeah, he was really... no, but yeah, he had definitely like a rough start and a rough parts of August, but he's been really good so far, and I think taking more advantage of trying to hit the fastball in the zone. Like I think earlier this year he was very focused on drawing those walks, and that's why he had so many of those Nimmos, right? Like down 0-2 in the count, and then you work it back to full.
Sure. He can when he wants to, or he can attack his pitch when he wants to do that.
But I think, and then at a certain point, he was missing a lot of fastballs, but now I think he's trying to drive those balls rather than be overly patient. And I think that's a good development because, look, I mean, the Mets offense all year has not been built on hitting the home runs, but it would be nice to hit home runs because it's infinitely more difficult to string together hits against top level pitching. So when you get to the playoffs, like there are going to be so many pitchers that are good at limiting these limiting damage and limiting these innings. So getting a big bop or two, it could be the difference between your season being over early or, you know, playing all the way to the last two teams standing.
Well, I mean, I think we should note, I just have notes here and I was going to talk about them at some point. You talk about limiting the home run in the postseason. And of course, I mean, for a pitching staff, that's just, you know, number one, a home run can mean the end of your season in some spots. And I know, I believe Mike Mayer over at Mets Mirage put out a pretty detailed tweet about what Mets relief pitchers have been doing in the second half, at least like the front end, the front line guys, your Diaz's, your Ottavino's, your Lugo's. Between the three of them, I mean, and Diaz has a 1.13 ERA, Ottavino's at 1.0 flat, Lugo's at 1.65. Ottavino's allowed one home run in the second half. Diaz and Lugo haven't allowed a home run yet. I mean, that's the type of stuff that's going to push a team through a tough postseason series. I mean, even going down to Chris Bassett, he did not allow a home run in August. Max Scherzer, I believe, was leading the majors in hard hit percentage in at least major league starters in hard hit percentage in August. I mean, a lot of things are coming together really, really nicely for the Mets offensively. You want to see more power. But I think that comes in waves. I mean, there's been slumps. There's been hot streaks. I mean, just look in August, you know, Mark Canna had a magical August. He finished the month hitting like 292 with an OPS over 1,000.
Yeah.
You know, Lindor for his, you know, 1-for-21, that was pretty meaningless, huh?
You know, like these guys, they're not always going to be on these long hit streaks. Lindor has pieced together a few of them this year. And yeah, there's going to be ups and downs. I think that he's probably been the most consistent Met.
Yes, man. Once he shook that finger injury, and everybody was waiting for him, man. Once he shook the finger injury, he's been Francisco Lindor as advertised, and then some. Like, this is just so cool to see. And
you know, that ball he got behind second base yesterday.
That was awesome.
That was an incredible play. You go from almost certainly having first and second then, or even, you know, maybe if they tried to run on Nimmo, first and third with two outs, to the inning being over. And that was as smooth a play, I think, that I've seen. And then to follow that up with the big hit in the next inning, he is so fun to watch, and just a really easy guy to root for. And the Mets have so many of those.
He was not that play had to be a 9.5 plus difficulty rating out of 10.
Right.
And he made it look simple.
Yeah.
Just awesome.
He is so slick. So slick. And then real quick, jumping back, we were talking about the pitchers.
Yeah.
You remember at the beginning of the year, I was saying Jesse, right, from Willett's Pen?
Yeah.
Yeah, we had him on. And I was saying, like, the Mets are going to need to get some high-level production out of Ottavino. And he basically told me not to count on it. I don't think anybody anticipated it being like this, how good Ottavino has been.
He's vintage right now.
But, you know, this guy, this is, like, the best he's looked. So
got a 2.01 ERA on the year.
Yeah. I can't even say that I was right about that, because I never anticipated this. But, like, the fact that it's turned out like that for him this year has been so, so huge. And I guess he's the backup closer now, right? Like, he's the setup guy now, right?
Dude, his slider has been almost as effective by WOBA as Diaz's. I think that Diaz and Class A are in the 100th percentile in WOBA, but by individual pitch run value, I know Diaz's slider is just through the roof. So is his four seam. Like, both are top 10. I want to say Ottavino is within the top 20. Scherzer's got two separate pitches in the top 50. Man, I wish I had a leaderboard up while I was working. Don't tell my boss. But yeah, just great stuff. And you know, this is vintage Ottavino, and I think it's a testament to what Jeremy Hefner does.
Absolutely.
What this whole Mets front office has been able to do with finding guys' strengths and putting that foot forward. And I know I said it before, and I really think that's what's happening with Naquin right now. I think they're trying to tinker, and he looks so uncomfortable. And he came here, and he looked comfortable. He was hot. He was hitting the ball. I think they're trying to kind of mess with him, and I think it's going to work out for the best. But boy, yeah, he looked very uncomfortable. But you have to think that behind the scenes, those types of situations are happening all the time.
Yeah.
It's a game of adjustments. It's cat and mouse. If you don't adjust and the other side is, you're lost.
Yeah, I agree.
Jeff McNeil, I had notes here on August. Jeff McNeil was terrific. 385, 414, 560. He had a 10.3% strikeout rate, which was incredible. His .315 batting average this season is fourth in baseball. Nice. Now, you can even include the awful, awful 2021 he had. .303 batting average since 2018, which is when he debuted in July. Still fourth in baseball. Jeff McNeil, and I know that batting average guys don't get a lot of love, you know, at least not in today's game. You know, you look back at your Paul Molitors and stuff like that. And, oh, wow, hell of a ball player. You know, nobody looks at Luis Arias or Jeff McNeil and like, boy, those guys are headed for the Hall of Fame. It's just, you know, the game has changed. But, you know, Jeff McNeil, very late start, 3,000 hits probably is not in his future. But
right.
The years and the seasons that he's putting together, especially if the Mets find success, a very underrated elite ball player.
Well, yeah, I agree, and I'm not like a batting average as a metric to determine value guy, but I really like guys who put the ball in play.
Well, it has its place. It's not the end all be all as it was for 80-100 years in this game, we have much more viable, much more effective ways to look at the game now through numbers. Yes. But batting average is not a lost stat. It doesn't mean quite as much. It's still right. A very important stat. It's just there's other more meaningful, I guess, slices to that pie. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm still impressed by guys that bat over 300 because it's really hard to get a hit.
I'm saying it right? Arias?
Luis Arias.
Yeah. And the year, I mean, you get to watch the Twins firsthand. You go to a lot of games. You watch them locally.
Yeah.
What he's doing is I didn't get to see Rod Carew. I'm trying to think of a pure hitter that I've seen, and I've seen a million, but I'm just drawing a blank. But what he's doing is so special, and it's just going mostly unnoticed. It's very strange.
It's like, I think Ichiro,
that's a great example, but yeah. He had that adulation from the whole game. You talk to average baseball fan. Oh yeah, you see what Luis Arias done? He's like, oh, who is that? Like they don't know. I'm not sure where I'm going with this, but it's very strange.
Yeah, and I think it should be
in the same boat.
I think it should be recognized a little bit more. Arias now is hitting for a little bit more power as well. I think he's up to 8 home runs on the year. So I was going to say I'd love to see Jeff see if he can open up the power a little bit more because
I'm fine with
a good amount of doubles, but it would be great to see a little more pop even.
My concern with McNeil trying to go for more power is him getting lost in that trap. I think that he does a really good job of taking advantage when pitchers make mistakes and he drives them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm much more content with Jeff McNeil as a doubles hitter. I really am. And he does that so well. I mean, he's a batting average guy, but he could also stick it into the gap or put it down the line pretty much when he wants to. When he finds the right pitch to do it, mm-hmm. like if you put him anything over the outside half and like knees to waist, he's going to send it down the third base line. He's just going to do it because he can. It's very impressive.
Yeah. He's having a great year and we haven't even mentioned how good he's been defensively.
terrific.
Luis Guillorme is like a magician. And the Mets, despite the fact that, Guillorme was playing a lot of second base and third base, and they have not really missed a beat defensively, even though he's been out. And he's like a gold glove caliber defender. So McNeil has really elevated that side of his game also. I thought the series that he had in Philadelphia all around, but especially defensively, was really, really special. So, yeah, more good things from the overwhelmingly positive Mets podcast.
Absolutely. Simply amazing, baby. Let's take a quick break. I want to come back and talk about the rotation, specifically where things might lead as the Mets get into October. But, yeah, it shouldn't be long. Let's take a quick break. We'll wrap things up and then get on with our holiday weekend. Hang tight. We'll be right back.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pie, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
And welcome back. As we were talking about earlier, the this will be coming out on Saturday, so the Mets have a game on Friday night. Max Scherzer will be taking the hill on Saturday. He's having a terrific season. Carlos Carrasco will be back in the mix on Sunday. Now, as the Mets head into the home stretch, and of course their strength of schedule eases up a bit, you can't overlook anybody, so we're not even going to talk about that. Every game is a potential win. It's all business, and I think Buck has that handled. But the Mets are going to have to make some decisions down the stretch. Now, with the way that the playoffs are scheduled, I think the Mets will have to employ a fourth starter at times. So, you know, you're not going to be able to get through a seven-game series with three as you were in the past before in previous years, you know, for a while there. Given what Chris Bassett's been able to do, not just in the second half, all season, but, I mean, look at him in August, 1.83 ERA in August, didn't allow a home run. He's doing it with a whip of close to 1.2, which somehow he always gets out of trouble. But you have a plethora of good arms. Taiwan Walker struggled a bit. If Carrasco comes back and he's still sharp, are you cool with just sending in those top four into the postseason with, hey, these are my guys. We'll break them up as we have to. Maybe Taiwan Walker gets a start here or there. He's a long man. He's coming out of the bullpen possibly. I mean, the Mets have options. Do you have any inklings as to how this could shake out, at least from your point of view?
Well, I'm interested to see, most of all, what David Peterson's role is going to be.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't necessarily great in the role that they gave him a couple chances to fill, but he's been really good as a starter. Every time that they've needed a good spot start from him, pretty much he's stepped up. And then he's been really good as a piggyback arm. And then Williams is basically the same way, but like the right-handed version.
Trevor Williams did not allow an earned run in August. Notably. Yeah.
I'm not sure. They have so many pieces to play with right now. For back end of the bullpen, I think a lot is riding on Trevor McGill, honestly. Tyler McGill. Trevor. But
noted Twins fan talking there.
But I if he's coming back and he's throwing like 100 in an inning and two thirds or something like that, that's massive, right? Yeah. And I think that changes when you can use guys. Like if that shifts, using Lugo is kind of like in a fifth, sixth inning role to get you six outs. I think that they have a lot of pieces to play with. And that's what I'm excited about the September schedule, really, because the Mets should win a lot of these games just based on like the quality of players that they have and who they're facing off against. And I know that we need to win as many as possible. I do think that, even though Atlanta is chasing them and that they need these wins, Buck's going to have the flexibility, I think, to play around with how he wants to piece together a game, because you're going to have games in the playoffs where somebody kind of has a blow up start just because that's the way it goes. You're playing the best teams in baseball. Those offenses are really good. You're going to have guys that struggle off the bat, but I'm just interested to see like how he tinkers with it. And I think he has somebody who has a great baseball mind next to him in Hefner too, to kind of help inform these decisions. So that's what I'm looking forward to most in terms of like flexibility.
You know what I'm looking forward to the most? is this version of Jacob DeGrom, like the one that we've seen kind of emerge in over the last few years, even with it with the injuries involved. But like that next gear, like that just unprecedented level of pitcher, Jacob DeGrom, I want to see him in the postseason. That's what I'm most excited to see. Of course, Max Scherzer in a Mets uniform pitching in the postseason, and that level of intensity will be something. But just the focus and the workmanship, that's, I hope I'm using that correctly, that DeGrom's displayed since coming back. And he's just, no rust, no nothing, just going out there, getting it done. I have just a couple of stats here, and it's almost mind-blowing. Speaking of mind-blowing, Zach Gallen from the Diamondbacks finished August with a 0.68 ERA, led the majors in F-WAR among starting pitchers. Zach Gallen. If listeners, if you don't know him, remember the name, because he's got the stuff. We talked about him, I think, when the Mets faced them, maybe not this season, last season. And a very nice start. He's just coming back from injury. Anyway, Jake, since he's returned, has walked less than a batter a game, 0.74, less than a batter per nine. His whip is 0.55. 18.33 strikeouts to walks. 36% called strike and whiff rate. 22% swinging strike rate. 136 batting average against. Those are all first in the majors since he's returned, by healthy, healthy margins in most cases. 13.62 strikeouts per nine. You'd think that that would lead the majors for starters. It doesn't. And I believe that Spencer Strider overtook him last night with that 14 strikeout. 14 or 16?
16.
16. My apologies. I had 14 earlier in the year, I think. But
lucky number 16.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Just, you know, he probably got a rabbit foot in his back pocket. See the size of his thighs, bro?
I think the pants do a little bit of work there, too. But, yeah.
No.
Haunches.
Dude, he's, I don't know if you've seen a hockey player's thighs. He looks like he has hockey player thighs. Looks like he's got Saquon Barkley's thighs underneath those pants. You're a football fan, you're right? You went to the Minnesota game last night?
Yeah.
Yeah, NFL team? You're a Vikings fan?
Well, adopted. But no, I grew up rooting for the Redskins, so.
Okay. Washington football team, right?
The Commanders now.
Oh, right. I see. I think I thought they had it right with the Washington football team, man. It didn't quite roll off the tongue, but I kind of thought it fit. It was weird.
You know, in some of the southern states, like Alabama or something like that, they'll like make jokes like, you know, thank God for Mississippi, because then they're not the worst. The Guardians should be like, thank God for the Commanders, because Guardians, bad name, but the Commanders is somehow like 100 times worse. It's so bad. It's the worst team name ever. Anyway, unrelated to the Mets.
Unrelated to the Mets. No, but we can always take a left. It's football season. I had my first fantasy draft last night, so I'm a little, I guess, football crazy, I guess. I'm a Giants fan. There's really not a whole lot to look forward to from a Giants fan seat this year, but just football season, it's just an exciting time.
Yeah, it is. And I can't believe how quickly this summer is gone.
When you're following a winning baseball team.
Yeah, it's been so special. We were talking about Jolly Olive earlier, and he was like, you know, I'll remember the 2022 season regardless of how it turns out, because it's been that special. He said he's never had this much fun following a baseball team. And I think that really encapsulates it for all of us. This has been such a special ride, and one way or another, it'll be over in like 8-9 weeks, regardless of how it turns out. So we've been saying it all year. It's worth savoring every bit, and it's not zero sum. You can enjoy every single game and every series and every week and every month without, you know, worrying that at some point it'll be over, because only one team's fans are truly going to be the most happy. Everyone else is going to be settling for the bits of joy that the team can provide. And this team has provided so many for the last 6 months or whatever. And hopefully they'll get an opportunity to provide even more going forward. But this has been a blast. It's been, a very fast summer. And now it's time to buckle down. So I'm excited to be able to follow this with you, Tim.
Same here. This is great. I mean, we talked about it a bunch last week, how this stuff doesn't happen very often for any baseball fan, no less being a Mets fan. You know,
this will be the ninth time that the Mets make the playoffs in 60 years. So
the ninth time, nine times.
Yeah. Nine.
Wow. Yeah, that's incredible. And, you know, I don't count 2016 as a postseason appearance. I'm not sure if they did, but one game is not a postseason appearance to me. I know it is another
sport. The same though.
It shouldn't be part of it. It shouldn't. One game playoffs, unless it's that tiebreaker game. And I've never been a fan of the one game wild card game. It's so silly to me. Anything can happen in one game. That's such an injustice to a season's worth of work. And I know that, you had chances all year to not be in a tiebreaker, not go into a one-game playoff. You should have won more games in the year. I get it. It just feels like you're leaving it to chance. And I know the better team will win, but will the better team always win one game in baseball? No. It just doesn't work like that.
No. Connor Gillespie could hit a three-run home run. So.
Oh, but that would – that 2016 Mets team, hell, for argument's sake, that 2015 Mets team, they were not a World Series contender. They got really, really, really red hot. They made some outstanding moves at the trade deadline. And not just Cespedes, kind of everybody, the Kelly Johnsons, the Juan Uribe.
Coke can.
What?
Yeah, Juan Uribe, Coke can.
Oh, my goodness. It was lightning in a bottle to me.
Yeah.
It felt like that was a team of over. Now you got me giggling in my head about Cocaine. God damn it. this feels real. This is the, 2006 felt real. 2006, that felt like, oh, wow, this is a dominant baseball team. It's complete from top to bottom. And then slowly but surely it started falling apart. Juaner Sanchez and then the starting pitching. And I still think trading Nady changed something. Xavier Nady was an integral part. But, what are we, 16 years later? We're not going to get into that now. this feels like one of those high watermarks that, you wait for. And like you said earlier, there's 29 teams every year that are going through that winter without the taste of champagne on their lips. I'm going to stop myself. Forget that. Taryn, I'm not going to lie, I find it very hard to get myself wrapped up in letting my life be controlled by baseball, by a team, by sports. I just kind of enjoy the ride. Gosh darn it, if I am not getting myself in way too deep with this team as far as expectations and trusting that gut feeling like, oh my God, something special is going to happen. And this is what I've been waiting my entire life for. That's where I'm at right now. And I got butterflies just thinking about it. Like, this is crazy. And I don't want to jinx shit. I don't want to get ahead of myself. But if this team's shown us anything, one, it's that they're extremely talented. Two, it's that they're not backing down from anything. They're not quitting when they're behind. They're not intimidated by a very, very good ball club. They check every single box. I know that there's spots that could have been brought more up to snuff. The middle, the meat and potatoes of the bullpen.
Catching position.
The catching position. Hey, James McCann, I think Gary saw it on SNY, but we all saw it on Twitter. Like, hey, McCann's putting together a couple of decent at bats. Oh, another line drive. Look at that. And then he sends one into the wall. Like that was good. You just gotta hope he translates it and extends it, because you know, if the Mets could ever use a hot month from James McCann, it's right now.
I know.
But you know, besides all that, get the slumps out of Vogelbach now. Get the slump out of Naquin now. Pete Alonso, I wanted to talk about Pete's slump. Get that stuff out of the way. The broadcast made a very good point of pointing out that pitchers are going upstairs. At least the Dodgers heavily were going upstairs against Pete, and he had no answer for it. So in August, Pete hit 207, 274, 299, struck out 21 times in 95 plate appearances. That's not Pete Alonso. We know that Pete's going to find his rhythms. You know that he's going to find his power stroke. You know he's going to go on these two-week tears. You also know that and we've seen it happen, you know, over and over again. And this isn't just Pete. This is any ball player. This isn't any team, any league, whatever. Adjustments are going to be made. Pitchers are going to attack guys, and Pete's always been susceptible to, I guess, a heavier influx of guys trying to adjust and figure him out because he's so dangerous when he is hot. So, you know, I mean, you've seen pitchers go outside, you've seen pitchers go high and tight, you've seen pitchers go low and inside. Now they're just pounding him up. It's just a matter of time before he adjusts again, but. You know, he had a real tough month, and the Mets still were able to, and we talked about the hot guys earlier, push through, get those slumps out of the way, find those grooves, and you know, you hit the postseason just firing on all cylinders, and that's how special things happen. And I'm dangerously excited. I'm chiding myself for being so damn excited right now.
No, I think it's good to be excited and to enjoy it fully.
Regardless. I've been hurt, Taryn. You don't understand. I've been hurt, man.
Yeah. Well, I mean, haven't we all? Like, but it comes with the territory of rooting for this team, this organization, but things do feel different. I don't know. I think it's worth it to go in head first, and you know, you might get hurt. It's more than likely that you will.
Yeah. Oh, of course. And maybe that's part of it. Maybe I've been protecting myself from getting hurt. I mean, dude, 2006, when Beltran struck out, I sat in my room in the dark for like a couple hours after that. I didn't move. Like, oh my God. Everybody got over it. You know, so much, in fact, that 2007 felt like nothing. Like, that hurt. Watching Shea close hurt more. But after 2006, 2007 was like, you know, this is just the epitome of being a Mets fan. This is what we've heard about for so long. This is just, you know, the most intense one that you could possibly think of. You know, one after another, and then after another, closing Shea the next year. But, it's just, you're a Grateful Dead fan. It all rolls into one, man. They melt into a dream, and this is the freaking dream right here.
That's right.
And for everybody, that's lyrics from Stella Blue. Please check it out. It's a beautiful song. The studio version is fine. You pick a late 70s live version and you might even cry. But that's another podcast, which me and Tara, we could actually probably do that. We'll get into that another time.
In the Aussie. Yeah.
This was supposed to be a quick one. We're just kind of having a good time, huh?
Yeah.
We love it. Love it. Love it. What do you got going on for the Labor Day weekend?
Going to go to... We got MLS team here, so I'm going to go there tomorrow. And then, just hang out, try to enjoy it.
I was taken by how intense those Seattle MLS crowds got. Does it get like that by you guys?
It's not quite at that level because this team is younger.
Okay.
But, going with a professor of mine, which I'm really excited about.
Oh, cool.
So I bought my friend's tickets and his tickets are like right next to the field, which is
awesome. All right.
Yeah. It's going to be a blast. And then otherwise just relaxing. It's all good. Going to watch some baseball.
Myself and youngest rider and Mama Ryder. We will be at the game on Saturday. Did not expect to be going to see Max Scherzer, but here we are, and we're going to see Max Scherzer, and we might even get there in time to get a three-quarter zip pullover from the Mets. That, I think that's cool. I always keep my giveaways. I got like a whole box of them going back to when I was a kid. I love that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, but of course, you know, it's the Nationals, but it's still an important series. They're all important series. Just win, baby.
That's right.
And that was definitely created for and patented by the New York Mets, not any other professional sports franchise. Just win, baby. The New York Mets. No, it's a Raiders thing, which you guys all know. Now we're just getting silly. We've gone well off the rails. Taryn, ready to go get our weekend started?
That's right. Let's do it.
Outstanding. You guys know the sign off. It's let's fucking go Mets. We'll see you next time. All right. Peace.